Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Super Tuesday, with 10 states awarding more than 400 delegates, March 6 is the closest thing to a national primary day that we have. And Ohio is the key Super Tuesday state. Not only does it award 66 delegates, the most of any state voting on March 6, but the Buckeye State will also be a central battleground in the fall presidential campaign. A win by Rick Santorum or Mitt Romney in Ohio could make the case for the most electable national candidate. In the latest Quinnipiac poll, Ohio poll, Rick Santorum is leading Mitt Romney by 7 points, but 45% of voters say they might change their mind before the election day. Joining us now by phone from an airport in Florida is Peter Brown, Assistant Director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute. Peter is the chief spokesman for the Florida, Ohio, Virginia, and National Quinnipiac polls. He works with his team to develop, analyze, and present the results of the polls. Welcome to the show, Peter.
My pleasure.
Also with us is Joe Hallady, senior editor of the Columbus Dispatch. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
And Bill Hershey, he's retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News, also worked in Washington for the Akron Beacon Journal. Bill, welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or comment out there in listener land, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Peter Brown, in the latest Quinnipiac poll, Rick Santorum leads the Ohio presidential field with 36% of likely Republican primary voters. Mitt Romney trails with 29 points. That's unchanged from the results of February 15th, 12 days before. Any surprise there as far as no movement?
No, I mean, the focus has been on Michigan and Arizona the last week or so. So that although some voters in northern Ohio have picked up some of the television ads, and the local television news from Detroit, you know, for much of the state, they are could have been living in Kentucky or Arkansas. This is the week that the campaigns and the media will focus on Ohio. The seven-point lead that Quinnipiac found for Mr. Santorum was up until the Michigan primary. In other words, it was through Monday night, through Sunday night. And therefore, what we don't know is how the results from Arizona and Michigan will factor into that. Will Mr. Santorum's lead go away completely? Will it be hurt a little bit? We don't know. Everybody likes the idea of having the momentum, but this has been a year in which momentum has been overhyped. If you think about it, Rick Santorum came out of Iowa with a ton of momentum, went into New Hampshire and finished fourth. Mitt Romney came out of New Hampshire with a lot of momentum, went to South Carolina and finished second by a lot. Gingrich then went to Florida and got beaten badly. The point is, the momentum seems not to have been that useful a commodity.
Or just non-existent. 45% of those polled said they might change their mind. Is that a large percentage at this point?
Not really, okay. Given the fact that, again, a lot people who vote have other things on their mind and don't focus as much as people who are in the politics and communication business. So there's a different level of information. There's a different level of certainty.
My guest is Peter Brown, Assistant Director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute. Also with us, Joe Hallett from the Columbus Dispatch, and retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News, Bill Hershey. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Joe Hallett.
Peter, everywhere I've gone, from Iowa to every place in between Ohio, Republican voters tell me their prime motivation is to defeat Barack Obama. In your poll, your last poll, it showed that 40% of likely Ohio Republican voters believe that Mitt Romney is the strongest candidate against Obama, while only 25% believe Rick Santorum is. Yet Rick Santorum is leading Romney in Ohio. How do you explain that?
Well, to a considerable degree, you have to watch what voters do, not what they say. And we're not going to find out what voters do until next Tuesday. But there's been a pattern this year, which is that the one that you've seen. Early, you know, a week out or more in a primary state, voters do say that they want the candidate who's best able to beat President Obama. And often that candidate is not Mitt Romney. But Romney has been able to close the gap. In Florida, he closed a double-digit gap and went on to win in double digits. In Michigan, he was down double digits 8 days out and won, although less strongly, by 3 points. the point is that as voters get more information about a candidate, they may change their mind. And when they get most of the information is the last week. You and television viewers in Ohio are going to see a lot of TV ads this week that you didn't see the week before. Television moves voters, and messages from television can have an effect. Also, news coverage can move voters. So that one of the things you're seeing is, in principle, voters say, yes, we think Romney's a better candidate against Obama. We want to beat Obama. But it may take them a while, or at least has in some other states taken them a while to warm to Romney, but they have warmed to Romney.
In the poll, when you asked how favorable the voters' opinion was of Romney, Santorum, and Gingrich, Santorum had the highest percentage of respondents who said that they hadn't heard enough about him to have an opinion.
That's correct. I mean, up until, you know, the February 14th trifecta that he won in Missouri, Colorado, Minnesota, he was, you know, he had kind of gone off the radar screen after what happened, his win in Iowa. And that, you know, average voters in places like Finley and Lehman and, you know, average folks in Ohio don't follow the campaign on a day-in, day-out basis. They see headlines. They get, as it comes closer to their time to vote, they pay more attention. But this is an evolution process that takes a while for voters to make their decision.
Bill Hershey?
Peter, in the poll, Santorum had a sizable lead over Romney among men, 38 to 25. But they were in a virtual tie among women voters, with Santorum 34, Romney 33. In past presidential elections, there's been a lot of discussion, or there is often, about suburban Republican women and how they don't like extreme, or what they perceive as extreme, positions on social issues. Do these findings relate to that, or is there some other reason why men go so much more for Santorum than women do in this survey?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, women as a group tend to be less or more risk-averse, and they tend to be, as you pointed out, a little less conservative than Republican men on what we call social issues. So that's certainly part of it. Also, Romney has talked about his family a great deal, which certainly hasn't hurt him. And he's perceived as less conservative. Now, the question is, how much less conservative? Obviously, it's showing some benefits in terms of Republican women versus Republican men. He needs to both win among Republican women and narrow his losing margin among Republican men. And that, again, in Florida and Michigan, when he came back to win in those two states, those things happened. Well, I'm not saying they're going to happen in Ohio, but that has been the pattern so far in the bigger states.
Peter, one thing I've struggled with for some time now is just to get a fix on who the Republican electorate is in Ohio. And what percentage of the base is culturally, socially, religiously conservative? I think in 2004, we saw those religious and cultural conservatives really flex their muscle by getting the constitutional amendment against gay marriage enacted, and that helped fuel Bush's reelection here in Ohio. And then again in 2006, we saw them weigh in for the nomination of Ken Blackwell for governor. And now we have a candidate in Rick Santorum who apparently would really appeal to those folks, more so than Romney. And yet I'm not sure just what percentage of the Ohio electorate they are. And what impact they will have in this primary. Do you have a fix on that?
I have a loose fix on it. Here's a way to look at it. Roughly a little less than a third of likely Republican primary voters. And let's put aside the unknown number of Democrats who will come in to make mischief, as happened in Michigan. Roughly 30%, you know, can roughly be consider themselves white evangelical Christians. Another 30% say they are Tea Party supporters, but that group overlaps. So I'm not saying they're 60% there, because there's a strong overlap on those two groups. But that gives you a general idea of where those two groups are in the electorate. And Romney is winning. Excuse me, Santorum is doing best among those two groups. He's doing well among people who consider themselves Tea Party supporters, and doing well among those who identify as white evangelical Christians. They tend to be more conservative voters. And again, by themselves, they're each about somewhere in the high 20s to 30% of the likely electorate, at least the likely Republican electorate.
But how many of them are crossover? Those are two distinct groups, but they're not distinct. I mean, there's Tea Partiers who are white evangelical Protestants.
Right, and what I'm saying is you can't get add the two groups together and say 60% is that group. I can't tell you, frankly, what the total number is. But it's obviously a substantial part of the Republican electorate. The other thing about crossover voters, you don't know. In other words, there are always crossover voters, some of whom, you know, cross over because they haven't changed their registration but they want to vote in this election because they honestly feel that's who they identify with. And some are making mischief. And obviously in Michigan, the exit poll said 9% of the electorate would identify themselves as Democrats. Now, some were what we used to call Reagan Democrats, and they might be people who might actually vote for a Republican in November. But certainly, given the effort in the state by both Santorum and some Democratic leaders to try to get Democrats out for Santorum, a segment of that 9% were people making mischief.
You know, I was talking with Paul Beck yesterday, who's a respected political scientist here at Ohio State, and he said that Santorum really lost his footing in Michigan in the last few days. He got enmeshed in this debate about birth control. He derided JFK's church and state speech. He called Obama a snob for wanting people to go to college. How much will that hurt him in Ohio? My guess is that the cultural conservatives, the religious conservatives, aren't going to be bothered that much by it. But independents who might be thinking about getting into a Republican primary or even Democrats, Reagan Democrats who might be thinking about voting in the Republican primary, are they going to be turned off by that? Are they going to see him as a little bit too extreme?
Well, certainly there may be some. There, as you said, Republican women tend to be less doctrinaire on social issues than male Republicans. So that's certainly a group of which, you know, Santorum is not doing well among comparatively to Romney, although he's, you know, breaking even among them with Romney. That's a group he could suffer some slippage with. They might respond to those questions. But I fundamentally, this is an election, and I would argue that the reason why Romney is ahead, having, you know, won where he's won, is that this is an election where issues 1 through 100 is the economy or some permutation thereof. And that happens to be Romney's strong suit. One of the things we find in state after state and nationally when Quinnipiac does polls is that voters see Romney as better able to handle the economy. And it may well be that although the media is focusing on social issues, that in the end, when voters actually go to the polls and get thinking about it, you know, a day or two out, they come back to the economy. And that has so far been Romney's strong suit.
We're talking with Peter Brown. He's the assistant director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute. Also, Joe Hallett, senior editor with the Dispatch, and Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Looking for an easy way to support 89.7 NPR News? How about joining our Sustaining Giving Program? As a sustainer, your membership never expires. No more reminders in the mail, and your WOSU member card renews annually. The ongoing support of sustaining members saves 89.7 NPR News time and money and helps us focus more of your support on news programming. Make every dollar count and become a sustainer today. Visit WOSU.org/sustainer to sign up.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. Explore a collection of European gems with Rick Steves as he highlights a dozen of his favorite discoveries. Don't miss this countdown featuring Rick's picks for Europe's most overlooked destinations. Watch Rick Steves' Hidden Europe. It's Saturday afternoon at 4 on WOSU TV. 40 degrees with cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. Partly cloudy skies today. We could see a little bit of sunshine and a high near 50 degrees. Clear skies for tonight and a low of 37. Showers and thunderstorms for Friday. Some of those storms could be severe. And another warm day, a high of 66. Showers and thunderstorms for Friday night and a low of 38 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Rick Santorum fell short in Michigan on Tuesday, but he says he's still proud of his accomplishments there.
We came into the backyard of one of my opponents in a race that everyone said, well, just ignore, you have really no chance here. And the people of Michigan looked into the hearts of the candidates, and all I have to say is, I love you back. Thank you.
Santorum did gain momentum in Michigan, although momentum is a questionable term, perhaps, in the weeks before the primary. Although he didn't beat Romney in his home state of Michigan, Santorum is ahead in the latest polls in Ohio. So will he hold the lead until Super Tuesday? Joining us to talk about that is NPR correspondent Tamara Keith. She's following Republican presidential candidates around the country, and she has landed here in Ohio. Tamara is familiar with Ohio. Back in 2004, she worked for us at WOSU.
Absolutely, and chased presidential candidates around that year, too.
Exactly. It's a cycle. And also with us, Peter Brown. He's assistant director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute. He is calling from an airport, and there's the usual airport chatter in the background. Welcome to the show, Peter.
My pleasure. Good afternoon. Good morning.
Still with us, Joe Hallett from the Columbus Dispatch, and Bill Hershey, a retired State House reporter. Once again, Bill, thanks for joining us today, and Joe.
Thank you.
I've been talking with Peter Brown, and we've been talking with him about the Quinnipiac poll, which has Mitt Romney trailing Rick Santorum by 7 percentage points heading into the final week before Super Tuesday and the Ohio GOP presidential primary. The first Ohio poll of the primary last week had Santorum with an 11-point lead, 37-26%, with a plus or minus margin of error of 4.2%. So that puts him roughly in the same place, right? I mean, it's just about no diff.
Well, it's barely within the margin of error.
Okay.
Depending on how large their sample is, actually. But, that's certainly not out of their ballpark. I mean,
Bill, you wanted to ask about Michigan?
Peter, Romney ended up winning Michigan, I think, by 3 percentage points. And he grew up in Michigan, as I did, although he was in Bloomfield Hills and I was in Flint, which is kind of a cultural contrast, I guess you could say.
And a huge financial one, too.
Yes, it was. Flint Central's not Cranbrook, but that's all right. He had a home field advantage there. Older voters in Michigan, like my parents, had voted for his father running for governor, and they knew of him. He comes into Ohio, and he does not have this home field advantage that he had in Michigan. Can that be quantified in any way? Is it worth 3 percentage points or 4 percentage points or nothing? Or is
It's very hard to quantify. But it's worth noting that a week out in Ohio, he's closer than he was a week out in Michigan. So, yes and no. I mean, home field advantage is a much talked about commodity. The question of how valid it is depends on how many people, think of him as a home field candidate. I mean, my guess is that there are an awful lot of people who are going to vote next Tuesday in Massachusetts who consider him one of them than people who voted in Michigan. Home field advantage is a nice term, and it probably has some benefit, but it's tough to figure out exactly how much. The other thing is that one of the things that's gotten ignored in all this is that Romney and Santorum actually are going to split Michigan's delegates, it appears. But the same night, Romney, gets them all out of Arizona, and there are almost as many in Arizona as there are total in Michigan. So that it was a good night for Santorum momentum-wise. But as I've discussed earlier, momentum isn't always all it's cracked up to be. But delegate-wise, it was Romney's night. We're now approaching the part of the process where delegates are what matters. Momentum, which has always been the byproduct of Iowa and New Hampshire, again, didn't appear to be that useful this year. But moral victories in Iowa and New Hampshire have in the past been useful. But a moral victory in Michigan in which you tie, in delegates and lose the popular vote and then lose all the delegates in the other states, you're going further behind.
Tamara Keith, when you worked here at WOSU, you covered the 2004 campaign, and
indeed.
I was wondering, when we're talking about Mitt Romney, any echoes of John Kerry for you?
A little bit, actually. I mean, obviously the flip-flop argument that became a huge problem for John Kerry is something that on some level has stuck to Mitt Romney as well, where at first he's for it and then he's against it. And, you know, people are allowed to evolve. But it is something, you know, when you talk about this is the candidate who has this issue, that's one of his issues. Also, the affluence. You know, John Kerry, a very wealthy man. It didn't dog him quite as much as it's dogging Mitt Romney right now, but it's a different time.
Joe Hallett?
Maybe Tamara and Peter could both answer this question, which I just forgot what I was going to ask about.
I can't do that in my line of work, Joe.
It'll come back to me, though. I'm sure it's very important.
Well, does the affluence issue play differently depending on whether you're a Republican candidate, as is Mitt Romney, versus a Democrat, as was John Kerry?
I think that it does play different party to party, but I was thinking about this. We have rich Republicans in Ohio who carry themselves well with rank-and-file voters. I think about Senator Portman, who comes from a lot of wealth in Cincinnati, and he can walk into a factory, he can talk to factory workers, and then he can go into a boardroom and talk to them. He doesn't tell them that he knows NASCAR team owners. He wouldn't think about saying something like that. Governor Rhodes, the late Governor Rhodes, said something real unkind about Mitt Romney's dad, about how he campaigned. It was something about a duck and football. And Mitt Romney seems to continue to stumble. Peter, I wonder, is there a point where either this affects him or doesn't affect him, or is this just a non-factor because of the jobs that you, I think, correctly pointed out earlier being the big issue?
The primary or the general?
I'd like to both of them, but I think more the general election.
In the general, it's possible, but we also, assuming that Romney gets to that point, he will have had, you know, many months to have made the point that I think many voters don't understand. Although he certainly comes from an affluent background, he made virtually all of his fortune himself, as I understand it. And he certainly has made a lot of money. And the Romney campaign would certainly be best served, should it win the Republican nomination, when talking to the general electorate, to make that point. I mean, I was talking to a Romney person the other day. He said something about, you know, Romney used to go in and work in the stores that Bain was trying to bring public. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it was, that would be a good commercial. The image is, fairly or unfairly, is that Romney was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he certainly is born in affluence, but not to the extent of the money that he now has. So I tend to think it's a bigger issue in the general than the primary. Romney's line that, you know, he's been successful and we shouldn't punish success but reward it, I think is probably a pretty good line with most Republicans.
Well, and I will say that Americans in general are an aspirational bunch. You know, we all want to be Mitt Romney. We all want to have $21 million on our tax returns. And I don't think that by nature Americans oppose wealth or resent people who are wealthy. He's just stumbled on it in a way that others haven't. I mean, we've had many very wealthy presidents in the past, and I think he might just be a little uncomfortable in his skin, or like if there's somebody who has a mole on their face and you're like, I'm not going to talk about it, and then you just accidentally say mole. I feel that's kind of like what he's doing with issues of wealth right now.
We have an email from Sue. She says, I attended Romney's town hall meeting yesterday in Bexley. It was my first time hearing him speak in person, and I was extremely impressed with his openness and ability to relate to people and issues. I think the media, both television and radio, are falsely presenting him as a rather awkward, detached rich man because of their own personal biases services. I didn't believe that before the meeting, but I believe it even less now. He was warm, open, knowledgeable, and Romney is very down to earth. I trust his experience in turning around the economy. Of course, it will be an uphill battle to debate a standing president, but he is the best Republican candidate to do him. My advice, see him in person to decide for yourself. Is he different in person than just in sound bites?
What I will say is that yesterday's event in particular was an excellent opportunity for the people in the room to see who he is as a person, to see him make a few jokes, to have fun. You know, he was wearing jeans and a shirt that was unbuttoned at the top with no tie, and he was very relatable. It was a town hall format. He said, "Ask me awkward questions; those are the best." And there was someone who asked him, you know. Show me that you have heart. You know, I know you have heart, but tell us here, show us your heart. And I think he did on a number of occasions. And I think that it makes him very relatable. The thing is, though, he doesn't actually take questions all that often. A lot of the time, he just has these events where he gets up and he talks and he leaves, and you're stuck as a member of the media with the sound bites or with the flubs that happen in a one-on-one interview with a local television reporter. But at that event, he really did shine in a way that he doesn't always.
Joe?
I covered the same event, and Tamara is exactly right. I covered a number of Romney events. That was the best I've seen so far. I went to the Cuyahoga County Republican Party dinner, which was a huge venue. There were like 1,500 people there. And I just have to say it, he was awful there. He gave a speech that did not connect. It was just a collection of unrelated cliches. And I think people were very disappointed. I've interviewed him in person, and he does connect that way. In big groups, he doesn't. But yesterday, he was really on, and I think that that question and answer format did serve him well.
And I don't fully understand why his campaign is so reluctant to do that. You know, when I was covering Newt Gingrich in South Carolina, every event I went to, he took questions from the audience, and he just ate it up, and he loved it, and he thrived on that. And I'm not sure whether the Romney campaign is trying to protect him or what they're doing, but when he does take questions, it works for him, I think.
Joe Hallett?
Well, I staved off senility momentarily.
to ask Peter Brown a question?
Yeah, and found the question both for Peter and Tamara. And Peter brought up this point that now we're getting into the phase where delegates matter. In Ohio, Santorum starts at a 9 delegate disadvantage because he failed to qualify delegates in 3 congressional districts. Beginning in April, we will become winner take all. Whoever, and we have big states coming up: California, New York, Illinois. It would seem to me that Romney still has the best chance of clinching the nomination before we get to
the
convention. But Tamara, you've probably seen him more, and Peter, you know, does Santorum just lack the organization and money now to really compete?
Peter Brown?
Well, first of all, I mean, he's got a small problem in Ohio that there are 9 delegates he can't compete for. He's got a much bigger problem next Tuesday in Virginia where there are 49 delegates he can't compete for because he didn't get on the ballot there. And this is a reflection of the fact that Santorum had little, if any, organization until very recently. It shows itself in the fact that Romney is dominating in state after state in absentee ballots. So that's a big plus for Romney and a minus for Santorum. We'll see it as we go forward. Obviously, Santorum has now coalesced the anti-Romney forces, so, you know, presumably he has more money and more organization, but he starts at a deficit. And delegates are what matters. You know, there are 400 delegates available, I think, next Tuesday. Ohio does not have the most. Georgia has the most. Ohio's second. Georgia has 76. And so what's likely to happen is, for instance, in Georgia, Newt Gingrich is ahead. In Tennessee, Santorum is ahead, according to polls. Obviously, Romney's going to sweep Virginia and Massachusetts. Ron Paul is likely to do well in caucus states in the Rocky Mountains. You're likely to see a split. The real question is, are we going to see a pattern where the other 3 candidates, not Romney, combine for more delegates than Romney gets? If that happens, then we get the mythical situation that every political reporter in America salivates over, which is a convention with no first ballot nominee. But you need all four candidates to stay in and to be getting delegates on a regular basis. And that's really the most important thing to watch in terms of delegates.
Tamara Keith?
And Romney's campaign for some time now, I mean, I'm sure plan A was that they were just going to dominate, but plan B has always been that they've got a ground game in basically every state in the country that's left over from 4 years ago, and they've got money, and their plan has been to sort of wait them out, get delegates along the way, get big states, that they have the staying power to fight this out for delegates over a very long period of time. I mean, the fact that we're talking about California and it's more, what is it, like 150 some odd delegates, that's amazing because California is so often irrelevant. But this year, it's likely to matter simply because, yeah, there are going to be splits and as you go along, there is no one dominant candidate. And in terms of who might get out, I don't think there are any strong candidates for someone to drop out. And I'd definitely love to hear your thoughts on it. But, Ron Paul is not going anywhere. He has his base of support, and he's here to make a point. Newt Gingrich.
Well, the question is, how long is his money going to hold out? How long is the super PAC going to hold out for Gingrich?
Yeah, that's the question. Well, if Sheldon Adelson, the casino billionaire, is just going to keep opening his checkbook, it could go on forever. And Newt Gingrich over the summer, I think that he was running his campaign on money out of his couch cushions. He doesn't have a ton of advisors. He doesn't want them. He is his chief advisor. And so he can run this thing on a shoestring if he wants to.
One of the things that really kind of baffles me in all this is how undercovered the obvious coordination between the candidates and their super PACs has been. I mean, when I think it was after South Carolina when Newt needed more money, he flew to Las Vegas to see Adelson, the casino owner, and basically said, pony up more to the PAC.
They can ask for money. They can campaign on behalf of the PAC, but they can't tell the PAC how to spend it.
However,
is that the distinction?
But they can share share office space, basically. I believe that
but they can't tell them how to spend it.
Right, right. But they can have their most trusted advisors run the super PAC. Their most trusted advisors from years of working together run their super
PAC. Which is the case with Romney. I mean, it just defies reason that there's no coordination going on here. And if so, it's illegal.
We have to take another quick break, and we also have to say goodbye to Peter Brown, Assistant Director of the Quinnipiac University Polling Institute. Peter, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Bill Hershey, Joe Hallett, and Tamara Keith. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Media suppression, corruption, and the murder of critics have marked the regime of Vladimir Putin, who's running for his third term as president in Russia's election next week. Despite mass demonstrations, he's expected to win. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Russian journalist Masha Gessen, author of The Man Without a Face, The Unlikely Rise of Vladimir Putin. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. The WOSU member card benefit of the month for March is Chamber Music Columbus. Enjoy 2-for-1 admission to the New York Woodwind Quintet on March 24th. Become a basic $60 member and get your member card by going to WOSU.org now.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. Information about how Montgomery & Associates can help you achieve your financial goals is at themontgomerysolution.com.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
We are foreshadowing what we can. The Super Tuesday coming up on March 6th. My guest, Joe Hallett, senior editor with the Columbus Dispatch. Joe, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
And Bill Hershey, retired Columbus Bureau correspondent for the Dayton Daily News. Bill Hershey, thanks again.
Thank you.
And Tamara Keith is with us. She's an NPR correspondent and an alumna of WOSU. Tamara, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Bill, you wanted to talk a little bit more about Mitt Romney.
Yes, I wanted to follow up on the comments Tamara made about the town hall at Capital University in Bexley. I guess Romney did very well there, but it seems like that was a significant thing, that he did well there. Does that mean he didn't do well at similar events or other events in other states? And we talked about his discomfort or lack of agility in meeting people being related to his affluence. I wonder if he were what Republicans like to call blue-collar working-class person, if he'd be any more comfortable in his own skin based on how you've seen him during this campaign.
Well, I will say that part of why the event yesterday stood out is because he took questions from the audience. He doesn't do that very often. The last he did it once in Michigan, I think.
And was it successful then?
Yes. My understanding. I wasn't there in Michigan, but I checked with our correspondent who was there, and yeah, he said it worked. And all of the reporters who are embedded with the Romney campaign, these are the young people with camcorders from the networks who have been following him since June and July. They all yesterday said, why doesn't he do this more often? I think part of what made it stand out is that it is rare for him to relate to people in that way. And in terms of, I don't know how much his upbringing and his life experience has to do with how he relates to people or doesn't relate to people. But I think that there are some people who in their DNA are the kind of politician who never forgets a face, who loves kissing babies and just soaks it up, who gets their power and their energy from being around people. And then there are people like, I don't know, me. That would be the worst nightmare to have to be in that situation every single day. I would say that Mitt Romney is more like most of us than he is like a Bill Clinton or a John McCain, who just loves being around people.
Freaks of nature. David in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks. I was listening to the comments about Romney's wealth and the inherited aspect of it. The wealth that you are born into is a very accurate predictor of the wealth that you will eventually end up with.
Even if you don't inherit a bunch of money.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And actually, we can argue about exactly what this is, but the point is studies have shown very clearly that the United States very much is opposite to our general image of ourselves, where we think, oh, yeah, anybody can pull themselves up by the bootstraps and, you know, poor man get rich. And it sure happens to a few people. But the point is other countries, Canada, Britain, and Scandinavian countries particularly, are much better at this, where a poor person can actually become wealthy. Here, the wealth of your family is a very accurate predictor of how much wealth you're going to have later on, regardless of how it comes by. So this idea that he made his money by himself, well, if my dad was a millionaire, I could probably make a lot of money by myself.
It's a concept called income mobility that that they've been studying. And in fact, income mobility in America has decreased in recent years and in recent decades. We used to be a lot more mobile, that generations would do better than the generation before, and that you'd move up the social ladder. And that has decreased a lot in recent times. And certainly someone like Mitt Romney had all of the advantages of being the son of a person who was a top executive at an auto company.
Connections.
Absolutely. Connections, going to a boarding school, at least for part of his upbringing, is my understanding. So there are certain advantages. But then again, there's someone like Barack Obama who did not have all of those advantages, and yet ended up going to Harvard, and he's doing just fine.
I think, as we've discussed a little bit, wealth is not necessarily an indicator of how you would govern or really how you relate to people.
No.
Obviously, right. We've seen wealthy presidents, John F. Kennedy, FDR, who were fabulously wealthy, who could connect on a very personal level with people. And I think voters and Americans had the impression that those candidates understood them. I think that's where Romney disconnects. I don't think that the average voter thinks he is one of them or gets them.
Mm-hmm. David, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Take care. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to talk about Ron Paul?
Yes. I'd just like to pose an idea to your panel and to your listeners that perhaps if we want to have somebody, a Republican candidate, instead of Obama, win the election, that Ron Paul might be a good choice to look at. And I know that he's not doing as well as, obviously, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum in some of the polling and the you know, previous primary elections and caucuses. But I think that what Republican voters should think about is that Ron Paul mobilizes a lot of voters who aren't usually in the Republican Party or who don't usually participate and vote, like the young crowd, young folks who Obama capitalized in 2008 to win, and also independents and people who were previously rather politically apathetic.
Okay.
So I just think, and you know, the media, I don't think, gives Ron Paul enough credit, or they always say, you know, he can't win, you know, he's just trying to get his message out, and, you know, he's going to take it as far as he can. But I'd like to pose the idea that perhaps, and actually according to a recent poll, Ron Paul actually beats Obama at the national level, where Romney is in a statistical tie, I believe, and I don't remember the source of that poll.
Okay.
So I just wanted to pose that idea, you know, just use my own voice to try to pierce through the media and put that idea out there. So I thank you for taking my call, and I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, Mark, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Joe Hallett?
Tamara can probably speak to this better than me, because I haven't covered Ron Paul since he was in Iowa, and I went to several of his events there. And by the way, to my knowledge, he is not scheduled to appear in Ohio before the primary. But at the events,
which affects your coverage of him.
Absolutely. If
you
he's
know,
not,
it's
you know,
it's
out
legit
of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's not here. But the fervency of his events and supporters and the excitement for his candidacy among his core supporters is far greater than I've seen for any of the other candidates. If you go to his events, I mean, these are rabid worshipers of Ron Paul. They buy into everything he says, and they're boisterous, they're fun events. It's an aura that is not included that I've seen so far with the other candidates.
Though he is sticking to sort of these smaller states, the caucus states, states where his organization and the passion of his supporters can overcome his lack of money and big campaign infrastructure, which makes it very difficult for someone like him to sort of move the needle on a national level in terms of competing for the nomination in a really competitive way.
Just suppose that Ron Paul were the candidate of the Republican Party. I think the caller's arguments cut both ways. I think it's possible he would lose Republican votes because of his positions on foreign policy. They might have to hold their nose and stand on their head and vote for President Obama, who engage in wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and Ron Paul has been the most consistent in terms of bringing the troops home, ending all foreign aid. Those are positions that he can speak to very well, but they don't coincide with the positions of most Republican voters, at least as the polling I've seen.
And you said cut both ways with Democrat. I mean, there's a lot of issues. His stand on a lot of issues would turn off a lot of Democratic voters.
Well, they would turn off Democratic, but it would turn off Republican
right,
voters,
to get
too.
Them there in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've heard about his supporters is that they are not, as the caller said, they're not your typical Republican voter. And in fact, they may not be enthused when it comes to the general election if Ron Paul is not the nominee. They may just disappear. His constituency are people that are unreached in some ways by either party, and are people who may just drop off the radar if he's not the nominee.
Bill and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I'm confused about Mr. Hallett's comment a minute ago about the difference between JFK, FDR, and Romney. I think he implied that those people, the first two people, did connect back in those days, but that was a different media back then. They were pretty secretive. And I think today there are some who say that the mainstream media is for Obama, and that would partially account for the fact that they keep going after Romney on his wealth.
Joe Hallett?
Well, I don't think I've gone after Romney on his wealth. I mean, you know, to acknowledge that he's wealthy is just to acknowledge fact. But I do sense, I wasn't alive with when FDR was president, but I was when Kennedy was, and I do remember that he did have a strong personal relationship, I think, with voters. I just don't sense that enthusiasm for Governor Romney. And Tamara's exactly right. I mean, what I learned yesterday at this Bexley event is that it's in him, that he can connect. And if his campaign is holding him back from doing that, then that's a mistake.
If he is the nominee, if Romney is the nominee, it's not the mainstream media's argument about his wealth that's going to be used against him. It's Rick Perry's arguments and Newt Gingrich's arguments early in the campaign when they were acting like Occupy Wall Street people to take down Mitt Romney for all his accumulated wealth.
They were coming at him from the left flank.
Yes.
And it's all been recorded for posterity. Bill and Powell, both, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
You know, the one thing that interests me, Ann, in all of this is how liberals for so long now have been demonized. And now we are seeing moderates being demonized. Newt Gingrich calls Romney a Massachusetts moderate as if that's almost an evil thing. This is a centrist state. We elect establishment candidates here, and even in Republican primaries, the history of this state is to stick with the establishment Republican. That may not happen this time. We'll see. Rick Santorum, I was talking to Attorney General DeWine, who's a strong Santorum supporter before I came over there.
And an establishment candidate.
But he said Santorum is going to get a lot of blue-collar Reagan Democrats, Reagan independents in Ohio, particularly along the Ohio River, southeast Ohio, up into, you know, the Lorain, the Elyria. And I don't disagree with him. The one thing I wonder, though, is if Santorum might have ruined his connection with those voters by his final week in Michigan, when, as I mentioned earlier, he got into the weeds on all these cultural issues, and I think damaged himself. Whether now those independents might think he might be a little bit too extreme for me.
The remark about education and snobs, you know, the president's a snob because he wants everybody to have a college education, didn't roll the way I think he was hoping it would.
No, and I feel bad for him because, and Tamara knows this, if you go to his events, he's largely sticking to an economic message. He said those things in response to reporters' questions.
So he's not good with the questions.
Well, you know, it's one of those occupational hazards of being a presidential candidate is that you go on these Sunday morning talk shows and people ask you about the thing you absolutely don't want to have to talk about, or maybe sometimes they ask you about the thing that deep inside you secretly do want to talk about, and then you accidentally say something that maybe you shouldn't have said that causes a distraction from the message that your campaign was supposed to have, and you lose a week. And that really is an occupational hazard of being a presidential candidate and you know, not always staying on message. It happens.
You know, Romney's first stop in Ohio after Tuesday's win in Michigan was in Columbus, the home of more moderate Republicans. And Rick Santorum will be in Chillicothe on Friday, southern Ohio, home to more of the evangelical Christian Republicans. They seem to be at this point sort of playing to their strengths. Is there any advantage in getting out of their comfort zones at this point?
There's not a lot of time.
No, there's not. There's not a debate where they're going to all be together. So I think they all want to get their base out. And Rick Santorum, when he was just beginning to emerge, the Christian conservatives in Ohio were already pumping him up. And they, in Warren County and southwestern Ohio, Cincinnati area, they're very fired up about him. But just one follow-up on this snob question. I thought that it hurt Santorum because he's a person with three college degrees of his own. My grandfather was a coal miner just like his was, and my grandfather couldn't have been prouder that my mother was a school teacher. My uncle worked in a factory, no high school education. His son became a psychiatrist. This is what, as Tamara said, we're an aspirational people. Our parents want us to do better than they did. And I don't know if this was reverse snobism on his part or not, or maybe it was just an off answer, like she said.
Though I think he did say it twice, which makes
so the tenure doesn't count.
Which makes it a little bit less of an off answer. I think that I saw a tweet somewhere yesterday where the message was basically like, on that issue, Rick Santorum may be out of touch with all of America, in that. People, you know, whether your kid ends up going to a trade school or a college or ends up working for, you know, doing lower wage work, everybody wants their kid to be a doctor or a lawyer or a physicist or, you know, everybody wants their child to be really successful. And so, you know, it really did not go in, you know, that whole aspirational thing.
It's hard
thing.
To believe he actually means that. Frankly, it's hard to believe. And that's what I wonder is if it's not so much the actual assertion, but do you really believe that?
Well, in some ways, he walked it back. In his acceptance speech or his slightly sort of concession speech in Michigan, the first thing he talked about was how his mother went to college and actually made more money than his father and had an advanced degree. So that was sort of like an apology without it actually being an apology.
Joe?
Not to switch the conversation here, but I think one thing we are missing so far is there's an 800-pound gorilla in the room of this primary, and that is Mitt Romney's ability to nuke his opponents, as he has done everywhere else.
Yeah, he's, let's see, let's get the numbers here now.
They call it
$3 million. Between his super PAC and his own campaign, already they've spent $3 million in Ohio.
Oh, and watching TV last night, it was remarkable. I mean, the airwaves are full.
And Ohio's expensive. You have to have money to win Ohio. You don't have to, you know what I mean? But it helps.
Yeah, I was talking to the political ad guy over at Channel 10 the other day, and I said, what is a really significant buy that, you know, that really a candidate would espouse to? And he said, $100,000 a week on our station alone. And that's what, you know, and then when you consider Ohio has three major media markets and seven overall. That's a lot of money.
Yes. Public media does not benefit from it, however. Mm-hmm. Right, Tamara? Tamara Keith, NPR correspondent. Thanks for dropping in today. We appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Also, Bill Hershey, thanks again for joining us, Bill.
Thank you.
And Joe Hallett, as always, thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.